see. They never wanted me. The curse is laid upon my race. Useless serpents, they bring disgrace. A man without a face. Of time they pass again. It's so hard to tell where and when. Yeah, just do the best you can. The flames will burn away the waste. All the lies that they told erased. A man without face. A man without a 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 face.
Welcome, dear ladies and gentlemen, to the Rabbit Hole Radio Show with your host, David James. I have a quick announcement to make. I would ask you all to pray for a man named Michael. He's bleeding in the brain, and he's in the intensive care unit. And so I ask you to pray for him. I had this prayer request, and I prayed immediately to the Father about it, and several times since. This was just yesterday, and will continue to do so. And I ask you to do the same, if you will. We must care for our brethren, and we must pray for them, especially when somebody requests it. But as a whole, always, anyway. So I hope that you will take part in that, and hopefully everything will be okay. You know, pray that he'll have a speedy recovery and that he'll get out of the intensive care unit, et cetera, et cetera. I wanted to thank Joe for his recent donation. I tried to send you an email to thank you, but it came back to me undeliverable, so I just wanted to let you know personally. Thank you very much. Okay. I have read you an Elizabeth Dilling book before. And it was The Plot Against Christianity. And it has another name as well. They changed the name of it. But this one is called The Red Network, which Elizabeth Dilling is famously known for. This first chapter here is called The Russian Revolution. Do we want it here? Imagine they were thinking about this in 1936. You know, remember I did Robert Edward Edmondson's book, and he was a great patriot of America. Of course, nobody is, you know, really would hear of him. And so that's the way it is. You don't hear about the real patriots. You don't hear about the real heroes of America. You hear about all the losers that are the heroes of the devil. I just want you to know, though, Sean Ross says that the Russian Revolution, as I've told you, the Russian Revolution wasn't carried out by Jews. Oh, no, they were all killed. Jews were killed there, like Trotsky in South America. This was done by the Swiss. Let's listen to a little bit of this, of what she said, because Elizabeth went to Russia. So She says, and we begin here in chapter 1, "To one who has seen Russia unblinded by the propaganda of a few model institutions shown to tourists and built by foreign brains and capital, this talk of revolution here to better economic conditions strikes terror to the heart. One recalls those great civilizations in history which were laid to waste and were then for centuries unable to rise again. In the Moscow Museum of Revolution, of the Revolution, quote unquote, I saw racks and racks of photographs taken during the Russian Revolution and its attendant famine. These pictures of people who starved to death lying in the streets where they fell, cannibalistic views of dead mothers and babies with half-eaten bodies, and revolutionary scenes of stark horror and misery were revolting past description." Now, remember that the same thing that happened in America, or even in Ireland with the potato famine, in Russia, the Jews saw to it the world had sent food to help the Russian people through this famine. But you see, the food was just taken and put into warehouses and never given to the people. They were giving the people one potato per family per week. So they would come by your house every day and knock on the door to pick up the dead. So you hear what she just said right here, right? See, this is the ultimate. The Jews are as cruel as you could possibly be. And when they're on the bottom, they're all tears and please help me. But when they're on the top, when they're on the top of things, they are the most tyrannical, evil. They're evil on the bottom too, but I mean, they're evil on the top, heavy duty evil. No mercy whatsoever. You can see these are not Anglo-Saxon people that have carried this out, because Anglo-Saxon people are merciful. Because we have that attribute from our Father in heaven. So, the Soviet government woman guide showing us these, she said she had lost two members of her own family in this famine and had seen worse scenes herself around Odessa. Later, I shuddered as I heard her announce, "There is no use to waste time here in the foreign department of the museum. You people all read newspapers. You know what we are doing in China, Spain, and in your own country, our strikes and all. One world revolution will start with China and end with the United States." Did you hear that? Our world revolution will start with China and end with the United States. In this department is a map of the United States redistricted, with our cities renamed as they are expected to be when the red flag waves over the White House. Are you digging that? I think the red flag is waving over the White House now. On this map, Cleveland is renamed Ruthenburg, Detroit is Lewistown, etc. Since I heard these ominous words of our guide, the December 24, 1931 issue of Imprecor announced that the Soviet power has already been set up over a sixth part of China. The Communist Daily Worker, which is a communist magazine, remember we've talked about it before, the Daily Worker of April 5th, 1932, in an article entitled "The Growth of the Soviet Power in China." Let me see. Gave details of great new Red Army victories in China. No wonder communists demonstrate in front of Japanese embassies against imperialist war on China. In January 1933, authorities reported seven provinces and at least 80 million Chinese Sovietized, and an inner Chinese Soviet state which had an army of many thousand troops trained by German and Russian officers. Officers, arms, and supplies were being sent from the USSR by an ancient caravan route through Outer Mongolia, a large territory practically annexed to the USSR after a revolution was engineered there in 1921. A point the League of Nations remained strangely silent about. Let me just stop there. Why would the League of Nations, created by the Jews, be silent about the revolution in Russia? Because they did all the damage, that's why. See, I've said this before, and we've witnessed this recently, that the Holocaust is just a mask to mask what they did in Russia and in Armenia and other places as well, while the world war was going on, one and two. So, especially one, though. And of course, well, two at the end with Germany, right? So, you know, this is a story that has a false story, a cover story, so that they want you, all of us, to just keep focusing on this fable of the Jews about the Holocaust because they don't want you to know what they did. The dirty, drab dilapidation of Russia, with its uncurtained, broken windows and unrepaired roofs, but with idle crowds roving in the streets, bespeaks the loss of private ownership, which always fosters personal interest and initiative. Communism has indeed abolished wealth in Russia, the wealth of those liquidated millions of the intelligentsia, aristocratic, middle, and small landholding classes, who have been killed or leveled down, has made way for universal poverty. Isn't that interesting? You see, the communists say that they would like to raise everybody from the bottom to the middle, from the top down to the middle. But you see what it says right here, what happened? Let me just read this again. The wealth of those liquidated millions of the intelligentsia, aristocratic, middle, and small landholding classes who have been killed or leveled down has made way for universal poverty. Now you see the real truth of how communism translates. Universal poverty. 30% of the poorer portion of the 160 million Russian population still remain to be dispossessed or liquidated, and so increasingly great trainloads of those resisting collectivization travel the rails to Siberia. Let me just stop right there again. We keep seeing trains of Jews going into Auschwitz and everything like that and all this crap, right? But what do we see? What would you see right here? What did I just say? They're sending trainloads of people who do not want or are resisting this collectivization, you know, communism, the commune, you get it? And they're sending them to Siberia. All right, I'll continue here. Ellery Walter counted recently in 4 weeks' time 17 trainloads, some 40 cars long, of such people. Men, women, and children peered out at him through the bars. They were en route to hard labor, prison camps, or death in Siberia. I hope you're listening. Siberia is now populated as never before with exiled peasants who have spoken bitterly about or resisted the giving up of their pigs, cows, or little homes, or nearly all of their grain, or have offended by upholding religion, and consequently are being punished as counter-revolutionaries or damagers. Beware to those who call evil good and those who call good evil. Tourists in Moscow may see near their hotels during the late and early morning hours the wild or deserted children sleeping in doorways. Funny how the news never told us about this, huh? Funny how this was all just glossed right over. Not funny. Funny uncannily, you know. It's very uncanny. It's very sickening. It angers me. It really does to think that this stuff has gone on. And the children always are harmed in one way or another by these Jews, whether they're touching them, whether they're making them homeless, whether they're brainwashing them, whether they're killing them before they, you know, even become children while they're on the abortion table. So, these are not the same wild hordes of children seen during the revolution 16 or more years ago, for those would now be grown. These are a new crop produced not only by now living conditions, but also by conditions of low living fostered by the communist government, destruction of faith in God, religion, and morality. Lenin's wife said in Pravda, the official organ of the Communist Party of Russia, here's the quote, "We have 7 million deserted children officially registered and 80,000 who have been gathered into our asylums. How many more are wandering about Russia? Couples may simply live together or register quickly as married or divorced by paying a payment of a ruble. These can hardly support the children of several successive unions on incomes barely sufficient for their own existence." See, this is what they want here. And this is slowly happening here. You see, again, let me stop. The German people in the Weimar Republic, see, it wasn't a republic, it was the first democracy in Germany. It left the German people eating out of garbage cans, while the Jews grabbed all their businesses and homes and everything else and were sitting inside the restaurants as the Germans walked by their own restaurants that they used to own, and they would mock them through the windows. So here we see another thing where people are eating people. I mean, it's even worse than eating out of garbage cans, right? How this could have taken place is beyond me. Anytime something has happened to white people in this world, there's no world body calling out to help them, to rescue them, is there? Like the people in South Africa today? There's nobody calling out to rescue those people. I'm praying for those people. I hope you are too. But nobody cares about them. They care about the Negroes starving. They care about the so-called refugees. They've gone in and bombed all these countries and caused all this problem. And now they want to help those refugees. They don't want to help the white people. So the world stood by while this was going on, just as the world stood by as Germany was harmed after the war like that. And the world stood by as we were starving in 1929. Same thing happened here, in case you don't know that. The world had sent food to us as if we needed it. And where did it go? It went into storage places. It didn't go to the people, just the same as there. Incredible. So it continues. Of course, a hospital we visited bragged of 40 abortions performed that morning. And an educational movie viewed by a friend showed pictorially to a mixed audience old and new abortion methods and the benefits of the latter. While visiting a model institution, model, quote-unquote, allegedly model institution for children at the Tsar's old summer palace at Tsarskoye Selo, we photographed the little tots naked from the waist up, running around in our party. Some not over 6 years old had learned enough English to beg, "Give me a cigarette, give me a cigarette." A six-year-old begging, "Give me a cigarette." In this and in other respects, our American institutions for six-year-olds are unlike the model products of the Russian Revolution. Concerning the Russian conditions, the U.S. Fish Report on Communism says, "Documents and books presented to the committee indicate that the most terrible kinds of vice are encouraged among the young school children in order to break down their family influence, which is the foundation of all religion." Semasho, Soviet Commissar of Health, confessed at one time that venereal disease had reached the proportions of a terrible plague. My friends, Mr. and Mrs. George Kreeders, have returned from Russia, where he, an American engineer, was in charge of 475,000 acres of agricultural expert for the Soviet government. As an agricultural expert. They tell of openly free sex relations among the 700 children between the ages of 11 and 17, and in the model cooperative children's institution on this project, and of indecent practices taught in the school there by a Soviet official from Moscow, and of the long line of these children who waited in line to be treated for social disease when a doctor and nurse came there for that purpose. All of the churches our guides took us to visit had been converted into anti-religious museums. Let me contrast that. When the Germans went through there, years later after this, they rebuilt the churches on their way through to fight the war. Now let's contrast that here. All of the churches our guides took us to visit had been converted into anti-religious museums. And of course they didn't say Freemasonic lodges. Life-size mannequins are dressed up in the church robes, and the most revolting interpretations of religious subjects are portrayed by them and by colored cartoons tacked up on large bulletin boards so that the crowds of young workers who are taken through may see and have explained to them by the Soviet guides how ridiculous religious faith is. The most exquisite church of all, the Church of the Redeemer in Moscow, was then about to be dynamited to make way for a palace of the Soviets. I have movies of nude bathing in the river taken in the heart of Moscow, men and women together, with the Church of the Redeemer in its background, beautiful St. Isaac's Cathedral in Leningrad, then an anti-religious museum, is now used as an atheist theater as part of the new five-year plan to close all houses of worship by 1937, and to eradicate even the thought of God from the minds of the people by a militant anti-God campaign. Let me stop right there. Would the Anglo-Saxons be doing such a thing? Who would want to do something like this? I don't even need to answer the question, do I? Who started communism? A Jew, two Jews, Marx and Engels. Who has always been the communists, the Reds, Edom, Jewry, the Tares? That's who would do it. No, it wouldn't be Anglo-Saxon kings. It wouldn't be Anglo-Saxon people. They would never do something like this. Only the Jew could be this cruel. Let's continue. Our guides took us to the Torgzin stores for foreign tourists, where gold trinkets, paintings, art objects, church robes, and icons looted from their former owners are sold by the Soviet government for foreign gold only. But no visitor or proletarian Russian gets inside the Soviet officials' special stores, where the best is sold to the higher-ups at lowest prices. The windows of these stores are whitewashed, and a guard with a gun stands out in front. Nor did our guides take us to visit the poor, miserable workers' stores, where long lines wait whenever merchandise is offered at prices the worker can afford to pay. My friends living there did take me, however. Goods on the half-empty shelves were labeled in several stores for display purposes only. Only counter supplies were for sale. An oil barrel in one had a sign, "There is no more," which had been there for 8 months, I was told. In one store, buzzing flies fought over three cheeses priced at 8, 10, and 12 rubles, $4, $5, and $6 per pound. Three fish displayed were priced at $3.75 per pound. A thin fly-speckled box of candy was priced at $5. Small individual pieces priced about 20 cents each. Although a Woolworth buyer in New York was offered all the Soviet candy he could use at a penny a pound. Do you understand what I mean? I know you do. Can you even begin to imagine what they have in store for us here? In other words, they're trying to sell some candy to these poor people at $5 a box, but they'll give it as a penny to some Jew in America. Unbelievable. And that was delivered. A penny a pound delivered. Incidentally, he patriotically bought American candy at 5 cents a pound instead. Isn't that wonderful? Probably because he didn't want to buy the flies, right? The products of Russian workers are dumped abroad to break the markets of capitalistic countries, to pay for some machinery which is rusted and unfit for use in a short time, and to pay for propagandizing communist revolution throughout the world. There was no meat in the stores when I was there, as it was August and there is no ice. Everything is strictly rationed. Soap was $1.30 a bar. Imagine that at that time, how much that really is. And limited to 2 bars a month. Black bread, dried herring, and cucumbers seemed to be the actual purchases of the average buyer, except at one store which offered carrots and another which offered them tomatoes, both of which had previously been impossible to procure. Unbelievable, man. Long lines waited to buy these specialties. Milk is sold at a special store, and only those with certificates showing that they have infants can buy it. I saw scaffoldings on numerous buildings, but while there saw no one working on them. An American engineer who had been there 3 years said nobody in that time had worked on a scaffolding across the street from our hotel. I saw buildings which had been slopped over outside with whitewash a long time before. To judge by their soiled appearance and yet the windows splotched and streaked with the whitewash still remained unwashed. I saw no window curtains anywhere, but I am told there are a few in Russia. Two of these three buses we rode in Leningrad broke down. The streets and roads were very much torn up and rutted. Let me just stop right. And the government cars rented to our party were trembling and unsure. Let me stop right there. What do we see in this sentence right here? This is what the Jew does. You see that the government vehicles are broken down. You see that the streets are all torn up. Does that sound like New York and Boston to you? See, these are shades of what's to come. See, the governments, it's not that they couldn't be effective or couldn't be helpful. It's that they're deliberately defective and deliberately non-capable. This is what the Jew, what kind of world the Jew wants us to live in, a pure hell. This is hell. In other words, what these people lived through, you may not really, you know, have known some of these things. I didn't either. I'm just saying that these people lived through a hell. And I mean a hell like we've never known. Can you imagine the cruelty? The Jew has half the world's wealth, and there was food sent to these people, and they did not give them the food. You know, if it was run by Anglo-Saxons, that food would have reached the people. This is how you know. You don't need to prove it. It's so easily proven. Just with common sense and understanding of who's who and who's Jew. Can you believe what you're hearing here? I mean, this is firsthand stuff here. This isn't hearsay. So let's continue. The streets and roads were very much torn up and rutted, and the government cars rented to our party were trembling and unsure. On one trip, a wheel came off of one, and an axle broke on another. However, one day we had the use of some very good Packards and Buicks. These were the private cars of minor Soviet officials loaned to us. I was told there were over 70 Rolls-Royces then in use in Moscow as the private cars of Soviet officials. Of course, the poor bundle-laden proletarian who walks or hangs out over an overcrowded streetcar is told that these cars are not the officials' private cars, but are only for their private use, quote-unquote. The socialist slogan is production for use, not for profit. Whose use, whose profit? Outside the towns, people poured out of old, dilapidated houses to see us go by. Auto traffic is a novelty. The incessant propaganda about communism and about what Russia is going to do is the only lively feature about Russia. So many of the widely publicized and supposedly photographed projects are merely on paper. Dinginess, bad smell, or dinginess, excuse me, bad smells, and a sense of fear pervades everything. The last manager of the Grand Hotel in Moscow with his wife and children had been awakened at 3 o'clock in the morning by the secret police, the GPU, and had not since been heard of. They have a saying, only the GPU works fast in Russia. My friend showed me their letters, which plainly had been opened and glued together again before reaching them. All dispatches by foreign newspaper correspondents are censored before entering or leaving Russia. Our ship was not allowed to use its radio while within Russian waters. Russian workers pay out about 30% of their earnings in taxes, such as the culture tax, quote unquote, for the privilege of reading newspapers and hearing propaganda at workers' clubs. A housing tax to build houses for others. This sounds like Germany today. A cooperative store tax for the privilege of buying at government stores, and an income tax. You see, behind all this is the smell, the bad smell and the dinginess of the Jew. You see, like as if the income tax wasn't bad enough. This is the kind of crap. This is what Bernie wanted to do. Bernie wanted to tax us more and allow all these people to go to college for free. Of course, they're not white people going to college for free. It's just anybody but whitey. It's the same old song and dance. Now, I would think they're going to blame it on this virus nonsense, but I would think that the national debt is probably doubled by now. I really haven't checked it for a while. But see, the Obama, in his first 4 years, put more on the national debt than all the previous administrations since the beginning of the country. Imagine that, again, right? A culture tax for the privilege of reading newspapers and hearing propaganda at workers' clubs. I'm just reading it again so you can hear it. A housing tax to build houses for others. A cooperative store tax for the privilege of buying at government stores, and an income tax on top of that. Besides, all workers must occasionally voluntarily give their whole month's wages to the government as a loan. Russians are forbidden to possess foreign money. Guards, barbed wire, spies, and heavy penalties inflicted on relatives left behind deter Russians from leaving Russia. And yet the Jews were able to leave Russia and come to America, right? You see, they stir up and cause a horrible thing to happen in a country, and they escape out the door and run away. And now they go back when things get better. The bedbugs in the Grand Hotel were wild about me. The listless waiters not interested at all. Some beautiful marble statues, large Sèvres vases, fly-speckled crystal chandeliers, and massive old furniture remained, contrasting sharply with the bare floors and cheap new iron beds. The hotel elevator ran once in a while when not out of order. Geez, that sounds like America today. The dingy windowed empty stores which line the streets, for only here and there a government store is operating, give a dismal appearance to the large cities. The few outcast private peddlers who remained when I was there were ragged and wretched-looking individuals and were soon to be strictly dealt with and banned. Let me stop again. Boy, I struck gold with this book, huh? Praise be to the Father. You see, when the Tsar was in charge of Russia before they got their revenge on him, which was 102 years later from when he said no way to the Congress in Vienna, when he said no way to the League of Nations. They got their revenge. Russia, the Russian Tsar, was the richest man in the world, and the people were treated right. See, the Anglo-Saxon was treating the people right. This is what the Jew has in store for the world. This is what the Jew would like to have, is the Jew world order. You can see that, right? This is what they want. They want people, like in Germany, eating out of garbage cans. They want people eating their own children on the streets and dying like flies. They want race mixing as much as they can. And they want to encourage, you see, what had you have just heard here is something that the Russians took to taking vodka and, you know, bad vices, which was encouraged by the government. So if you want to know what communism is, you're hearing it right now. This is, I like these people. Well, I don't like them very much, but I had one girl tell me, it's time to give communism a try. How would you like to try that? If she even had an idea of what communism was, would you like to try this here, what you're hearing? Would you like to try that? Would you like to try what a democracy is in Weimar, the Weimar Republic? Because we're on our way to this right now. This is what communism is. This is why it doesn't work. The Jew is an insipid, filthy, dirty, rotten, murderous, lying creature that is so vile. I don't know how anyone cannot see it through their smiles. These vampires are exactly what they are. They are vampires, and they bring other races, other beasts of the field into our countries to vampire off of us. They're doing nobody in the world any good. See, if they were God's chosen people, they would have mercy as the Father has mercy. Do you see any mercy here? As a matter of fact, these people are better off dead than living like this. Wouldn't you agree? Is this not hell on earth? Do we not see shades of this in America and in our countries now? So let's continue. The hotel food was the best Russia provides for its tourists who pay precious foreign money, and was infinitely better than the Russians get. But it had a kinship with the smelliness of everything connected with it, and affected the digestion peculiarly. Due, it was said, to benzoate of soda preservatives used. Ragged proletarians loaded with bundles fill the railroad stations. The mattress and pillow tickings of the special first-class sleepers we rode on were revoltingly dirty. On the train, unwrapped black bread sandwiches were handed to us out of a basket by a girl with soiled hands around 9 a.m. Regular breakfast was served at the hotels between 10 and 11 a.m., luncheon between 3 and 4, and supper between 10 and 11 p.m. Fresh fruit was non-existent. It is exported. What happens if you don't have fresh fruit? Scurvy. All kinds of things. Heavy disease. May the Father destroy these filthy, rotten Jews. How this was ever allowed in the first place. If the world knew about this, we'd come down on these Jews in a heartbeat. Because we don't want this in America. That's what she said at the beginning of the chapter. Do we want this? Let me ask you, American. Do you want this? Pardon me for raising my voice, but I hope you're a little angry too. Can you imagine this? Even exporting the fruit so the people couldn't get any nutrition at all, any real nutrition. What kind of hatred are we talking about here? What kind of hatred could do such a thing? You see, as I've told people before, we are the farmers. We are the people that can grow the food, and we could shut off the Jews at any time in the past, but didn't. We're not that cruel. But you better believe, ladies and gentlemen, that like this, when the Jews are in control of food and water and medicine and everything else, you can be sure they'll shut you off. I guarantee, as you can certainly see here, there is no mercy whatsoever in these people. When they talk about hate and hate laws, you better understand, we all better understand who the real haters are and what they're capable of. Believe me, they'd like to do this even twice as much in America. They'd like to double down on this. These people are killers, murderers. In every way. And listen to what she says right here. We were constantly told how much better off the Russians are now than they were before the revolution. Can you even conceive what I just said, what was just said right there? Do you think that's true, that they're much better off than they were under the Tsar of Russia, the Anglo-Saxon Tsar? Do you think they're better off now? To be sure, we visited suburban homes formerly owned by well-to-do families, now in use as workers' clubs or homes of rest and culture, as they are called. In one of these, workers in undershirts were sitting around, one hammering on a grand piano. Their old hats were hung on an elaborate old lamp at the marble statuary. Beautiful paintings of former owners still hung at each end of the paneled dining room. The floors were bare. See, let me just stop right there. They had elaborate, you know, beautiful paintings and everything else. Yeah, they're certainly better off now, aren't they? The floors were bare and none too clean, and there were iron cots in the living room and dining room. The dining table was covered with soil oil cloth and set with black bread and soup for the noonday meal of the inmates. A plaster bust of Lenin with a red necktie tied slightly askew graced the window seat in the living room. Out of the window, we saw the photographed girls, very scantily clad, lying in the tall grass in what had once been the garden, near an ornamental pool, then filled with trash. So let me stop right there again. That's what the Jew, that's the atmosphere of the Jew. Now, the nigger is the same as the Jew. If you look at South Africa today, you can't even see the street anymore because there's so much trash there. And the beaches, they urinated and defecated and left children there and destroyed everything. So you see that there is a secret relationship between the Jews and the blacks. There's no doubt about it. I was never in Russia before the revolution, but as I passed miles of homes along the roads now neglected and nearly falling down, and noted how many of them had gingerbread carvings on them, it occurred to me that someone must have cared for them more than their present occupants do, or else they would have never bothered to carve them. As I watched the workers in the stores and noted what they were buying, I concluded that if they had formerly had less to eat than they were now getting, they would not have survived. I met Russian bourgeois exiles in Switzerland who had escaped only with their lives and whose relatives had been killed after the revolution. I believe that those exiles and the millions who were killed are far more fortunate than the poor Russian proletarian left behind living as a mere cog in a godless, slave-driving state machine. Welcome to the machine. See? Stepping from Russia into Estonia, I guess that's how you say it, I just say Estonia, is like stepping from the slums into a comfortable neighborhood. Until only 15 years ago, Estonia was part of Russia, but it has since had democratic government and private trade. The clean window curtains and potted flowers and the busy bustle of trade and traffic and the general air of well-being contrast sharply with gloomy Russia. When over 1,000 communists rioted in front of the Chicago School Board offices March 27, 1932, they bore a placard, "We want Soviet conditions here." I'm going to take a sip of coffee while I think about that. Again, let me ask you a question. Do you want these Soviet conditions here? Because the Jew wants you to have them. Who do you think these communists are, most of them? Some misguided Americans, openly or covertly, are echoing this sentiment. The universities seem to have joined the gutter communists in going red, quote-unquote. They unite in using the argument that inasmuch as the American economic system, quote-unquote, has collapsed, quote-unquote, quote, "We must have Russian revolution to right matters." Owing to the spirit of Christian, not atheist, mercy, deeply ingrained in the American people, no one is starving or will starve here who asks for aid. I compare the miserable food and living conditions of Russians who work with the rations of our country and charity unemployed poor to the latter's advantage. Moreover, no freeborn American can conceive of the Soviet despotic regulation of the smallest personal matters of conduct and conversation. Let me stop right there. That's exactly what we're talking about. Micro, you know, they want to control our speech, our thought, our actions, our will, everything you can think about, down to the smallest detail. And yet their father says, "Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law." You see the problem? Much less would Americans want to live under such Soviet conditions, quote unquote, here. While I was in Moscow, factory workers who had long protested bad working conditions decided to strike. At once, soldiers and machine guns surrounded the factory. The workers were given 15 minutes to decide whether to work or to be blown to bits. They worked. The present economic depression or collapse, quote unquote, see? Now, shades of today, right? The collapse. The present economic depression. They're saying this is going to be way worse than the IMF just come out and said. It's going to be way worse than the depression of the 20s, 29 and 30s, right? Listen, the present economic depression or collapse is not as unprecedented as was the era of prosperity which just preceded it. No other country at any time has ever had a standard of living, a condition of general welfare to compare with ours. Since our struggling little 13 colonies pioneered through to the foundation of this nation, we have survived wars and many depressions or quote unquote collapses. Yeah. Without halting our upward march and without ceasing to be the Mecca of the whole world. Immigration barriers have been necessary to hold back the multitudes drawn here by the opportunities and liberty offered under our form of government. Well, it's not the form of government, lady. I suppose it wasn't quite a democracy yet, right? It was still a republic, so maybe, okay? Africa, South America, and other lands have soil and resources as rich. But they have lacked our government and those American principles which have inspired progress in the people of all nationalities who have come here to make America their home. Well, I'm not interested in that. Macaulay, the historian, said, "Your republic will be pillaged and ravaged in the 20th century, just as the Roman Empire was by the barbarians of the 5th century. With this difference, that the devastators of the Roman Empire came from abroad, while your barbarians will be the people of your country and the products of your own institutions." Can you smell the Jew? Within each person lies the spirit of the power to help guide events in this nation either towards Russian revolution with all of its horrors or upward toward firmer American principles and new American progress. Will our people rise in this crisis as they have before, or will they at last fall? That depends on you and me. I think that's it's disgusting. It's disgusting to hear what the Jew would do to people if they are given absolute control. It's even more disgusting to think that it was financed from this country and people from this country, Jews from this country, went over there and they were financed here by Jews that are here to destroy those people. which tells you that they were on their way to destroying our people too. And they have begun this long road. Have we recognized Russia? She says. Have we recognized the poor Russian peasants deprived of food cards and deliberately liquidated, starved to death by the Soviet government within the last year as class enemies, quote unquote? Isn't that what they're saying we are? Class enemies? A number estimated at 3 million by Ralph Barnes of the New York Herald Tribune, 4 million by Henry Chamberlain of the Manchester Guardian of England, and 5 million by the pro-Soviet Walter Duranty of the New York Slimes. At the recent London Economic Conference, Maxim Litvinov calmly admitted to the European diplomat that the sacrifice of 15 to 20 million more people will be readily agreed to by the Soviet government in order to transform Russia into a real communist state. From America of November 25th, 1933. Anna Smirnova, Moscow factory worker, answering questions about Russia in the Communist Daily Worker of November 10th, 1933, says, "It is true that we are unmercifully driving from our ranks and from our enterprises all those wreckers and counter-revolutionary forces in our midst, those forces that are using all their intelligence and physical strength to hold us back and to establish a capitalist society among us. To take, see, again, let me just stop you. Well, let me just finish that and I'll explain something. You see, this is a, well, I'll explain it now. This is a Hegelian dialectic. You see, they're brainwashing these people into communism, and communism are the Jews. And they are juxtaposed, or they are the antithesis of capitalism, which is also the Jews. And the synthesis of the two is what we see in America today. Once you get the synthesis of these two, it progresses more and more towards the communist part. Just as you see in America, when you see the synthesis of the two parties, it's not going toward the Republican way, it's going toward the Democrats way, which is the Communist Party. Remember that Alinsky said that. He said there's no need for a Communist Party in America because the Democratic Party is the Communist Party. So what's happening is, it's swinging to the Democratic Party, the Communist Party, even the Republicans, because they're all bought and sold. They're not running the country. So we'll just stop right here. I'll start on this Anna Smirnova thing next week. And I must say, this is very disturbing. Very, very disturbing. And we're on page 17. Now, this is a kind of a big book, too, but all I can say is, may the Father have mercy on us. You know, one of the things I'll say before I go is that when you see the Russian people and the people of Eastern Europe, not only did they kill millions and millions and millions and millions, I mean, you know, it can be up to 100 million. It's somewhere from, you know, 60 to 100 million, somewhere in that vicinity. Well, only the Father really knows how many that is. They race mix these people. They destroyed their morals. They destroyed the churches. They destroyed everything. And then they race mixed them. When you see these people, they're not really, they don't look like Anglo-Saxon. If you look at Putin's head, that's not an Anglo-Saxon head. The skull shape. You've got to pay attention to skull shapes. It's very important. Anyway, I always give a nice piece of advice at the end of the Rabbit Hole radio show, and that is, don't go down the wrong communist hole. and all communist holes are wrong.
They bring disgrace. A man without a face. The signs of time, they pass again. It's so hard to tell where and when. Yeah, just do the best you can. Lines that they told erased. A man without a face.